Island Gas, March 18th, 1989. It is 11:05 a.m., and members present are myself, Senator Pierce, Senator Adams, Senator Kelly, Senator Fisher. Senator Halford is in Anchorage today. I'd like to welcome everybody. Today we'll be taking public testimony from throughout the state on Senate Bill 97, an act relating to the Oil and Gas Properties Productions Tax. It is sponsored by Senator Adams of the committee, and it is better known as the ELF Bill. Today's agenda is as follows. During the first hour, we're going to have special interest groups testify. Groups like, I know in Fairbanks, we have the Committee to Repeal the ELF. Here in Juneau, we have a person representing the Resource Development Council. It's my understanding that we have some groups in Anchorage. Yes, I just received that list. Those individuals representing groups will have 5 minutes each to testify. When we finished with all the special interest groups, we'll go to public testimony by individuals. And depending upon the number of individuals we have on the network, we'll give you either 2 or 3 minutes for your testimony. If you have written testimony that takes more than 2 or 3 minutes, that's fine. If you will give it to the person at the Legislative Information Office, they will send it down to us. We'll make copies available to all the members, and we'll make sure that it is in the public record. I would appreciate it if the LIO operators out there would help me in letting people know when their time is up. It's important to me that we're able to hear from everybody who's out there to testify today. When you come to the microphones, please speak clearly into the mic and be sure to state your name at the beginning of your testimony for the record, and also tell us who you represent. Let's see, why don't we go to Fairbanks first, to Mr. Don Lowell, who is with the Committee to Repeal the ELF. Mr. Lowell, would you please step to the microphone? And you have 5 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm the chairman of the Committee to Repeal the ELF and the prime sponsor of two state initiatives, one to repeal the economic limit factor, and the second to reinstate separate county. And we have, at this time, over 11,000 registered voter signatures that have these initiatives on the ballot in 1990. We recommend repeal of the ELF for the following reasons. First, the oil industry explored or found and developed all of the major oil fields and most of the smaller fields in Alaska when oil prices were in the $5 to $6 price range per barrel, when no economic limit factor existed. The oil industry designed and built pipeline and pump stations, terminal facilities, and oil prices to $5 to $6 prior to the existence of an ELF. The ELF was supposedly designed, according to its author, to extend marginal fields. But what constitutes a marginal field that the ELF relates to? Alaska produces 25% of the nation's oil, yet we have less than 0.1% of the nation's oil wells. That doesn't appear marginal. Texas produces an average of 4.2 barrels per well per day. Louisiana produces an average of 20 barrels per well a day. California produces an average of 9.3 barrels a day. And all these wells have to be pumped 24 hours a day. Now last year in Alaska, we had 1,326 wells producing close to 2 million barrels for an average daily production per well of 1,500 barrels. And no pumping was required. On an average then, Alaska had wells producing 1,500 barrels fully without pumping, while Texas had wells producing 4.2 barrels a day and had to be pumped. And yet, Texas does not have an ELF, nor does Louisiana or California. The fact is that none of the other 32 oil and gas producing states in the Union have an ELF. Further, no country or state in the entire world has an ELF. Additionally, I want to state that the administration says that $100 million be saved by amending the ELF completely, and completely eliminating the ELF would save somewhere close to $400 to $500 million, depending on the price of oil. Reinstating separate accounting would provide additional revenues to the state of about $232 million for an annual savings of about $700 million a year.
The Fairbanks guy with the Committee to Repeal the ELF, he's the one that's gotten the two issues trying to get stuff in the ballot. He's the one working with Mark Boyer's
the price of oil. If it's not economical and feasible to produce oil at $10 a barrel, $2, a break of $2, then wait until the price of oil goes to $12. We're being pressured by the oil industry to give away our non-renewable resources as a trade-off for a few jobs. Again, facts show that it is the price of oil, not the elk formula, that provides those jobs. Further, industry statistics show that Alaska has a significantly smaller workforce in the oil industry than any of the other large oil producing states. And if you subtract the instant Alaskans, probably 50% of the workers are non-resident. I've served under Bill Egan during his three terms, and with his vision for the future needs of this state, Bill Egan would never have allowed the state to be duped into an elk, and certainly he would never have allowed separate accounting to be repealed. An irreversible mistake that's cost the citizens of this state over $1 billion and continues to cost us billions of dollars a month while we hesitate to implement corrective action. Okay, in summation, we recommend having the economic limit factor repealed and separate accounting reinstated. Stating that, we support Senate Bill 97. We recommend that you take the interim steps of amending the ELF retroactive to June 1987 and commission a comprehensive tax report by a leading independent authority on the procedures of state and state to assure the future needs of our citizens are protected while allowing sufficient incentives for the development of those resources. And if anybody listening would like to join our cause, they can contact the committee to repeal the ELF in Fairbanks. And Madam Chair, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lowell. Senator Kelly.
Hey, Mr. Lowell, Senator Kelly here. I'm kind of confused as to the makeup of your committee. Are you the folks that are paying all the money to put that the governor's produce program on the air?
Yes, that's correct, Senator.
Have you registered with APOC to disclose where you're getting your money, where you're spending your money, where you're receiving your money?
Yes, we're registered and we're exempt from having to disclose the source of our dollars and how we're spending them because at this point there is no election ballot scheduled, and until such time as the Lieutenant Governor certifies our initiatives that they're going to be on the ballot, we're exempt from that, and we have both the verbal and the letter in writing from APOC on that. And as the source of our dollars, most of these came from unemployed oil field workers, from unemployed painters, from unemployed electricians and laborers around the state, and probably half of the dollars came out of my pocket.
Is there any reason why you wouldn't release to the committee where your funding has come from and who they are?
No, I don't have any real problem on that, and but at this point I'm not required to disclose the source of the dollars, and I'm not required to report how they're spent. For your information, I probably spent about $8,000 on that video release last week, and again, probably half of the dollars came out of my pocket.
Is any of the money from groups or organizations as opposed to individuals?
No, I don't think so. There may be, I'd have to check and see the exact source of all those dollars, but most of it came from individuals.
Well, I mean, if you don't object to it, it'd sure be interesting for us, I think, to know where that money is coming from. I know you don't have to report it, but if you wanted to, I'm sure we'd be interested in seeing it.
Senator, you're breaking up. I'm not getting your conversation.
Senator Adams.
Well, a good president was asking for a list. This is Adams. He was asking for a list of where your contributions come from. One of the things that you might want to look at also is the campaign contributions of this committee also. Can help you with that?
Well, we have been looking at those campaign contributions from our senators. We know that one of the individuals on the committee is actually employed by the oil industry. We find a big conflict of interest from him and from some of the other members on the committee.
Well, again, you know, this is Senator Kelly. I think the difference is that you can look at our APOC reports and we can't see where you're getting your money. I think that would just be an interesting information for the committee.
Okay, but Senator, when we do get these initiatives approved by the Lieutenant Governor, then we will provide full disclosure. You have to realize that at this point, we're earning very few dollars or getting very few dollars in from the public, and we're spending very few dollars. When it gets on the ballot, then comes a full campaign issue, and full disclosure will be required. Of course, we will vote for that.
Then call Anchorage and say that community councils, the Gears may have to testify as an individual. Thank you very much, Mr. Lowe. Now we're going to go to Anchorage, and the first person I have in Anchorage is Mr. Vince Withington. And Mr. Withington, the name of your society is shortened here so much I can't tell for sure what the middle word is. It's Petroleum, maybe Accounting Society. Would you please testify in 5 minutes, sir?
Okay. My name is Vince Withington. I'm a member of the Petroleum Accounting Society of Anchorage. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on House Bill 118, the House Bill. As I see it, the issue is not whether or not the Alton shooter should not be changed, but whether or not the state has enough money to cover budgeted expenditures. In the past years, when the state had enough money to cover the budget, that was not really an issue. Some politicians get elected by spending money. The more money, the better. If they can get more money from business rather than from the people, so much the better. That's the real reason behind the health debate. Some politicians want more money. But do they really need more money? I don't have to look very hard to find items in the state budget that are truly out of line for a state government to be involved with. Grant net $2.7 million, power cost equalization $20 million, longevity bonus $61
million,
full harmless payment $16.4 million, commercial fisheries support $23.7 million, food marketing $4.8 million, agricultural loans subsidies $2.7 million, tourism promotion $11.2 million. In addition, are we getting the best value for the dollars that the state is currently spending? Why are the state employees paid on the average 40% higher than the private sector? Is this better government or just more government? Why have the number of state employees increased by 10 times when the state population has only doubled? Is this, again, better government or just more government? Why are state expenditures for education 3 times the national average? Are we getting a better education for our children or just more government? Why are expenditures for highways 5 times the national average? Are we getting a better transportation system or just more government? Why is the state spending per capita 4.5 times the national average? Know that prior to oil and Trudeau Bay, the average was only 2.5 the national average. Again, are we getting better government or just more government? Why are state agencies permitted to hire lobbyists to influence the state legislature? Are we getting better government or just more government? State government in 1988 increased state employee headcount by over 1,000 employees. Did we get better government or just more government? The governor's budget will again increase state employee headcount by over 400 employees. Will we be getting more government or will we be getting better government or just more government? Since we are paying top dollar for the services state government is funding, I ask you, are we getting what we're paying for? Will House Bill 118 give us a better government? I think not. Is the state of Alaska giving us value for our money or just more government? I believe we are only getting more government. I do not favor increasing taxes until the state starts spending our money in a reasonable and responsible manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Withington. Next here in Juneau, we have Debbie Reinwan from the Resource Development Council.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Debbie Reinwand, and I represent the Resource Development Council. We're a public interest pro-development group with members, over 2,000 members, ranging from miners in Nome to loggers down in the Tongass. Our broad-based membership has been for a staple tax policy in the 49th state and against increased taxes, a policy that fosters new investment and development but provides a return to the state. It's a sentiment that echoes across Alaska, a point brought home in the budget workshop last Saturday. There, Alaskans spoke out strongly against increased taxes from ELF to an income tax, instead turning to fiscal cuts as a way to balance the budget. All Alaskans understand state government is facing a fiscal crunch. Without perpetuating the finger-pointing syndrome, RDC respectfully suggests that while massive cuts are not the answer, neither are increased taxes, particularly on the one industry which fuels so much of our budget right now. When all the smoke and mirrors fade, the reality is we need a healthy and productive oil industry, and the best way to foster that is through stable taxes. We need to stop thinking about short-term quick fixes, such as increasing the cash flow into the Treasury through SB 97, and start thinking about the long-term ramifications of such a move. We've outlined some of those, which include private sector job loss associated with higher taxes, projects that would be stalled or shelved completely, the loss of long-term state revenue from marginal economic projects, as well as the loss of oil and gas reserves due to early abandonment, and delays in important technological advances which would otherwise extend the lifespan and productivity of Alaskan fields. Mary Heller with the Governor's Policy Division recently said, you can't cut the budget without hurting somebody. Likewise, you can't increase taxes up without hurting the people of Alaska. Just as the Governor would like to move Alaska away from thinking of the construction industry as a basic industry, so would the private sector like to wean Alaska away from thinking of state government as a basic industry. State government is big business in Alaska because of resource development revenues. Private sector jobs will replace government jobs, and that's a vital message being sent to the legislature by the citizens of Alaska. Questions?
Thank you very much. It's like you got by with no questions, Debbie. Okay, we'll go back to Anchorage. We'll go back to Anchorage to Mr. Bob Gardner with the Alliance Support Industry.
Good morning, members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Robert Gardner. I'm appearing before you today representing the Alaska Support Industry Alliance and as a very concerned citizen. I'm employed by Insert Consulting and Engineering in Anchorage in the capacity of Alaska Operations Manager. Our office presently employs 30 people, which is an increase of 5 over 1986, and our firm felt the maximum impact from the collapse in oil prices. In 1988, 85% of our Alaska revenues were derived from work for oil and gas companies. I'm opposed to Senate Bill 97, which is an act to change the way the economic limit factor is calculated. You've heard a lot on the ELF lately. The arguments you will hear today, both pro and con, will for the most part have been presented previously during the last legislative session, during the recent House Resources Committee hearings on the ELF, or in numerous articles, editorials, and position papers. It is clear to me that the entire ELF matter is just the tip of the iceberg. The problem is very basic. The state does not have enough money to fund the operating budget at the present level, and clearly not at the level proposed for fiscal 1990. The governor and several members of the legislature seem to favor government for government's sake and propose making up the shortfall by imposing additional taxes. Modifications to the ELF formula is but one of these tax measures. Even if it is enacted, I am sure the champions of big government will be back next year for more. The deficit problem will simply not go away by imposing additional taxes on the oil industry. State spending must be reduced. There seems to be a fundamental misunderstanding about Alaska's position in the oil and gas industry. Proponents of ELF changes often refer to the profits posted by the major companies operating here and argue that these companies can clearly afford a tax increase. Recent profits posted by major oil companies have come for the most part from downstream operations, for example, refining and marketing. Domestic upstream operations such as exploration and production have often operated at near break-even or at a slight loss. I am sure you are aware that we do not have much in the way of downstream operations in Alaska. We are an upstream state. If we continue to add to the cost of production by enacting changes to the economic limit factor, the major operators will move to supply their profitable downstream operations from more stable, lower-cost sources. Most positive steps the state of Alaska could take under the current conditions of world oversupply of crude oil would be to demonstrate a climate of tax stability in order to encourage continued investment here. I therefore find it hard to understand why the governor, the Department of Revenue, and proponents of changes in the ELF believe that the Alaska oil industry can absorb whatever tax burden the state wants to impose without any negative trickle-down effects being felt by the remainder of the private sector. I can only assume these individuals are representing the government and government employees, and certainly not the rest of us. Their philosophy is to get everything we can now, maintain state spending at the current unrealistic level, and build an ever larger state bureaucracy. This may look like long-term job security to a state bureaucrat, but to me, in a private sector oil industry support role, it looks like disaster. Our employees also need job security, professional challenge, and a good quality of life. We in the support industries have endured salary cuts, loss of jobs, and a dismal business climate as a result of the collapse in oil prices a few years ago. Our firm and many other like us have made the necessary adjustments to continue our operations in a down economy. Unlike state government, we have had to live within our means, and we now welcome the return of some stability, albeit at lower oil prices within the petroleum industry. I am told by the amount of time I would like to send you the rest of this. In the summary, I'd like to say I find it hard to understand how a state that had the foresight to create a permanent fund cannot have the foresight to deal with the budget crisis except by quick fix tax measures. The government does not create wealth, it only redistributes what is already there. Every dollar collected in taxes is for the most part lost to the economy for investment and growth. We do not have a revenue problem in our state, we have a government spending problem. It is time to stop talking and take some positive action. The legislature has been in session for approximately 70 days and so far has produced several hundred pieces of legislation, not one of which is addressed cutting the budget. Several, including the bill being discussed today, have dealt with raising additional sources of revenue. On behalf of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance, I urge you to take the
Thank you very much, Mr. Gardner. Just to let everyone around the system know, we have people in, individuals in Soldotna, we have individuals in Nikiski, in Whittier, we have people in Kotzebue, Fairbanks, Anchorage, and here in Juneau. I would appreciate it if Soldotna and Nikiski would let us know if any of your, I've got names, but I don't know whether any of the individuals are representing nonprofit groups, so if you could let me know that, I would appreciate it. We're going to go out to Kotzebue next, to Chuck Green with the Northwest Arctic Borough. Chuck.
Good morning. My name is Chuck Green. I'm mayor of the Northwest Arctic Borough. I would like to state for the record that I support Senate Bill 97 as sponsored by Senator Adams, who's from my district. Support in general any adjustments suggested that for those House Bill 92, Senate Bill 97. Which will enhance the Northwest Arctic Borough's ability to provide much needed services to the residents. The adjustments, as I understand, would reduce in several ways the pressures my administration is experiencing in relation to unemployment, reduced revenues, and funding for education. My testimony is very brief, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify and would encourage the legislature to vote positively on Senate Bill 97 and also House Bill 18.
Thank you, Chuck. We appreciate your being with us today. We will go back to Anchorage now to George Cruz with the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. George.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. My name is George Cruz. I'm president of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. I think I could probably save a lot of time by just echoing Mr. Gardner's comments. I thought that was a very fine testimony, and I congratulate him for it. We know that for Alaska business to continue to survive and grow, we must attract new investment capital to the state. The oil industry will send a signal to all outside investors that Alaska's tax regime is unstable, will make our state less desirable as a place in which to invest. I would ask the members of your committee to consider the impact of this legislation on all resource development activities in the state. Put yourself in the shoes of the chief executive officer of any major oil, mining, timber, fishing, or even tourism enterprise considering a new investment in Alaska. Would you be willing to risk your investment capital in Alaska, seeing that state government tries to balance the budget by increasing taxes on resource industries rather than cutting the cost of its operation? We believe that changing tax laws after investments have been made and committed sends a very negative signal to outside investors. Although I personally am not a technical expert on the workings of ELF, it's obvious that the ELF is doing its job in encouraging new investment in Alaska's oil fields. Drilling activity and other investments on the North Slope are increasing, thus providing jobs and business opportunities for state chamber memberships and businesses throughout Alaska. We believe that any change in the current health system would result in a reduction of these activities. The state chamber urges the committee to reject this legislation. It is not in the best interest of Alaska business and resource development in Alaska. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Cruz. We'll do one more in Anchorage and then we'll go back to Fairbanks. Mr. O'Connor, please. And please also state who you're representing.
Good morning. I'm representing Big Oil Film Service Company, and I want to thank you. I tried to do this before the House Committee and had a rough time. It took all afternoon and half the night. I appreciate not having to fight that again. Anyway, on behalf of our company, and I'd like to say Mr. Gardner pretty well filled you, but we oppose both to the House bill and the Senate bill, and basically believe that the problem is not raising money, it's stop spending money. And I guess sometime they'll figure that out down there in Juneau. But anyway, we in the oil industry have had to cut back, reduce wages and benefits, as well as overheads to stay in business, and we figure it's about time that the state figures the same thing out. Last year, our company did increase in size, and we think a lot of it can be attributed to the ELF coming in. So, I might keep my time short, and that's all I have to say. Except that I may have gotten in the wrong spot here in the nonprofit groups, but sometimes I think our company is a nonprofit group. As tough as you guys have made to make a living. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. I hope you're not a nonprofit group, but special interest. How's that? We'll go to Fairbanks now to W.R. Cox with the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, and I'd like to say a special hello to Rebecca Miller up there from the Office of the Governor.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and committee members. My name is Wally Cox. I am President and Chief Executive Officer of the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, representing in excess of 776 member businesses and business leaders. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to testify before your committee. The Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce has consistently opposed any legislative initiative to unduly increase taxes on individuals or businesses. Specifically, we have opposed modification of the economic limit factor to increase the severance tax small producers pay since that strategy has emerged. With increasing frequency, we see demonstrations that help us fulfill its intended purpose. Oil company investment is stimulated, the jobs are on the increase, enhanced recovery methods maximize production, planned capital programs are moving forward. All this because health is working. If the strategy of the administration to balance the budget is full funding, the vehicle is, in the main, increase in new revenue generation. That concept to be credible and palatable means the state must stimulate a climate for economic development to produce a wider tax base. Restructuring to eliminate duplicating logical alternatives of cutting state spending and growth receives little attention. Neither does the reference to a level playing field. That's a sports metaphor. But objective truth as well as objective right and wrong are its basic precepts. That principle likewise seems to get little weight when developing and adopting the budget. It's curious that the only state that gets 85% of its revenue from a single source draws the battle lines for that industry. When oil prices decline,
about 40.
A significant growth in administration staffing occurs. The new social programs are offered or existing programs expanded, and the basis of revenue to support the budget is not sufficiently diversified, a truer government must prevail. Decisions are required. Demand efficient, cost-effective operation. Vigorously negotiate expiring labor contracts. Implement a reduction in force. Forces of action to reduce cost of government are many, with services still provided. Responsible and mature government recognizes that to retain or attract industry, a stable tax philosophy must prevail. Industry should be able to expect that. We oppose Senate Bill 95 and any other legislation which would modify the current structure of ELF. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present our position on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Now we'll go back out to Kotzebue to Susie Ehrlich from Manelik Manpower. Hi, Susie.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate being here and listening to the other people make their testimonies, and I think I'd like to make something very clear, especially to those from the large urban areas and Christian Fairbanks. State government may be big business in the urban areas. State government spending is not big business in the bush, more specifically in the remote villages. State governments in the villages are the lowest on this tier level for the state governmental system. They have been the first to be affected by any cutbacks by the state. In our villages in the region, the state spending can support basically two people, the city administrator and the assistant city administrator. They are obligated to fulfill the requirements as set forth by the Title 29. With that in mind, they need to comply with IRS taxes, they need to comply with the Single Audit Act. And let me tell you that the villages experience or get about 80,000 on the average from state municipal and revenue sharing funds. That is not enough for them to fulfill the obligatory requirement. As I spoke to every village this past week in regards to proposed testimony, through the RadNet system, they were gratefully aware that they knew about the ELF. Maybe not enough to discuss it, but they knew it impacted them. Our radio station here cannot reach every village, and the only way that they knew anything about the ELF, most of them, was through the RadNet system. That system is vital. It cannot be taken away. Now, in speaking to the villages, because of their awareness, they are totally in support of Senate Bill 97, as sponsored by Senator Al Adams. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie, very much. Back to Anchorage, and I do not know of any other groups represented in anywhere but Anchorage, so we'll go through the Anchorage groups and then we'll go to individual testimony. Next on my list is Jerry Foster with the CAP program.
Thank you, Senator Pierce. My testimony lacks a lot of statistics about ELF because I assume you already got all the facts you need from the administration and the industry the last couple of days. I'm the communications coordinator for the Alaska City Action Program. Received a lot of feedback from employees through our annual opinion polls. I'm interested in a variety of subjects such as child care, substance abuse, education, and some of the subjects that we're seeing the most common time in our state spending and R&L. As an article employee since 1981, let me share with you why state spending and oil taxes concern us. When oil prices collapsed, oil field employees were one of the very first to get hit. Early retirement, layoffs, loss of wage and benefits were a fact of life in 1987. The domestic oil industry lost hundreds of thousands of jobs. Atlantic Ridgefield lost tens of thousands. Standard Alaska and Arco Alaska lost hundreds of jobs. Same price has stabilized, although at a lower price level. Since then, we've learned to live within our means. We were able to continue development and drilling in our maturing fields. Same thing concerns us because we've learned to do more with less, while the governor's proposed budget does just the opposite while putting our jobs on the line again. Because we're one of the first sectors of the economy to go down, it comes no surprise that we're one of the first to bounce back. Arco Alaska's employment has grown by 225 people, or 10% since June of 1987. As a lifelong Alaskan, I'm proud to say that 80% of our 2,800 employees are Alaskan residents. And while these people are employed throughout Alaska, 349 are in Senator Pierce's district, 385 are in Senator Fisher's district, 514 are in Senator Halford Kelly's district. Now, Senator Adams, I haven't forgotten about you. 15 AAI employees live in your district. Obviously, not enough to keep you from sponsoring this bill. The past couple of weeks aside, oil prices have remained low, and some of our folks haven't seen raises for 3 years. How can this be, you ask, when auto profits are so strong? Our corporation's coal, chemical, and refining operations are worth $5 per $1 in Alaska oil and gas. And Arco Alaska, we're working hard to control costs so that we can bring these profit surges outside of Alaska into Alaska. Higher oil prices would attract more investment, but we can't control oil prices. Our fields are returning, so there's upward pressure on operating costs. This leads to taxes. We can't control taxes. Therefore, much of the investment climate is dependent upon your actions. Common sense dictates that if you want more of something, subsidize it. If you want less, tax it. SB 97 raises taxes on 90% of Alaska's oil production. With crude oil being declining, compliance embarking on enhanced oil recovery, higher taxes can only result in less oil and less future jobs. Marginal projects exist at crude oil being compartment. And the drill site operators who fight daily excess gas, water breakthrough, corrosion, natural wealth decline. Yet the ELF debate is being carried out by politicians, bureaucrats, and attorneys, both of whom have no practical experience in the oil field. All Alaskans should be concerned about the loss of oil field jobs and the loss of oil recovery. With respect to jobs, I'm sending a committee on economic analysis which compares relative productivity and economic impact that oil field jobs versus state and local government jobs have on the Alaskan economy. Raising taxes now provides more money for the state government to squander. Leaving ELF alone allows maximum oil recovery, and because the private fund captures a fixed percentage of produced royalty oil, maximum recovery maximizes the deposit in the private fund, therefore returning the greatest amount of money to every Alaskan through the PFD program. I want to thank Senator Pierce for holding ELF hearings. My conviction has been that the more opportunities oil field workers have to present their side of the story to the general public, the better informed the public would be, and the less pressure there would be to raise taxes. Today, we'll hear many emotional arguments regarding the ELF. On one side, Alaska oil field workers, once again, concerned about their jobs. First, it was due to price drop, now due to a possible tax increase. On the other side, you'll hear union workers still seeing over the loss of employment, which they blame on the oil companies due to the expiration of the project labor agreement. And then there will be others, most rational, others not so rational. Please finally take a definitive stand on oil taxes soon. Lawlessness in the governor's campaign, which is long on cue phrases meant to pit the public against oil field workers while being short on basic oil field knowledge. Because the governor has access to the press, he can get it in instant. The industry stands, spends money to answer his charges. Please take a stand on this bill. Stop the media wars. We can spend our money better on jobs. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Foster. Sounds like you brought your cheering section with you. We'll go to Norma Johnson in Anchorage next with Common Sense Alaska. And I've been corrected. We do have a representative from the Juneau Chamber of Commerce here in Juneau. So we'll stay here in Juneau after Norma.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and committee members. My name is Norma Johnson. I'm the Executive Director of Common Sense for Alaska. I'm a lifelong resident of Alaska, born and raised in Cordova. Common Sense for Alaska recommends that no new or increased tax measures be enacted until state government size and spending are reduced to a reasonable and sustainable level. Operational state government spending has increased in net-breaking speed since Common Sense for Alaska first issued a study in 1986, which showed total capital and operating per capita state spending is 5 times that of the national per capita average. Individual Alaskans and Alaska's businesses desire and need a stable tax system. Increasing the state revenues through reimposing state personal income tax, enacting state sales tax, use of the permanent fund, increasing the state's gasoline tax, or increasing the tax burden on the oil industry should not receive the attention nor discussion it is currently getting. The state does not have a revenue problem at all. It has a spending problem. Using 500,000 residents, current Alaska per capita state spending is $4,600 in just operating general fund expenditures alone. When federal funds and capital dollars are added, total state spending in Alaska comes to $6,480 per capita. The state of Washington, with a total annual budget of $5.1 billion and a population of 4.3 million, represents $1,173 in total per capita state spending. If Washington state government were to spend what Alaska does on a per capita basis, Washington would have to spend $28 billion annually as opposed to the $5.1 billion. California spends $2,246 annually per capita. Were they to tax and spend what our state does, California's budget would have to be $181 billion annually, which would mean a revenue increase of $118 billion. According to the State Department of Labor, Alaska's per capita income was $18,489 in 1985, and $17,969 in 1986, a sharp drop of $520 in just that 1 year alone, which is most of that was felt in the private sector. The department does not have more current per capita income than what it was recorded for 1986. However, in discussing with one of the department's analysts, 1986 figure of $17,969 is expected to show further decline. Comparatively, the state of Washington's per capita income for 1986 was $14,979, while Alaska state government spent upwards of 5.5 times that of the state of Washington's government. Personal income in Alaska is only one and a fifth times that of the Washington per capita wage earner. Compounding the spending problem is the increased rate of indebtedness the state government has incurred over the past few years. The state's per capita debt is now somewhere in the area of 12.25 times the national average. Alaska state government is the nation's highest per capita state spender, and excluding local government debt, Alaska takes first place in the nation in state per capita debt. While we were spending more money, we were also incurring more debt at the same time. Alaska is 4 times the national average, has 4 times the national average in state employment. The U.S. average is 120 state government jobs for a population of 10,000. In Alaska, state government jobs run 400 for a population of 10,000. When state and local employment are combined, the U.S. average is 435 government positions per population of 10,000. Alaska's combined state and local government positions are over 900 per population of 10,000. Bear in mind that revenue sharing and municipal assistance and grants pay for much of Alaska's local government workforce. New and increased levels of taxation only serve to retard economic growth and serve to discourage current and future investments. Senate Bill 97 is no exception to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Norma. Here in Juneau, we have Mr. John Gucker with the Juneau Chamber. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is John Gucker, and I'm here representing the Greater Juneau Chamber of Commerce, of which I'm president, and the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, of which I'm a member. I manage the Minor Publishing Company, a firm which has been doing business in the state for over 90 years. I'm a lifelong resident of the state whose livelihood is directly dependent on state spending. As a member of the chamber, I am very aware of the difficult economic situation confronting our state government. But as a bottom line, I feel that the answer to the problem of expenditures which exceed income is not through solutions which will frustrate the growth of our largest industry and create suspicion and reluctance on the part of potential investors in our other natural resource industries. We made a decision several years ago on how we would tax the oil industry. I don't feel it is fair to change the rules as we see fit. If we change them now, when will we readjust them to our liking again? When there is another state budget crisis? I feel actions of this nature do not project a good, sound environment for continued resource development in our state, and am therefore opposed to this legislation. So thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you very much. We are going to go back to Anchorage for Stephen Darnell with the International Association of Energy Economists, and then we'll go to Soldotna for Mayor John Williams, who's president of the Conference of Mayors, and then we'll come back to Anchorage. So, Mr. Darnell, please.
Good morning. My name is Stephen Darnell. I'm an economist in the private sector of the Alaskan economy, living and working in Anchorage. I'm here this morning as a spokesman for the International Association of Energy Economists, the Anchorage chapter. The economists in our organization oppose any revisions of the economic limit factor, including those changes proposed in Senate Bill 97. The ELP was created and implemented by the legislature to encourage oil industry investment in marginal projects in all Alaska's oil fields, not just in the smaller fields. The ELP formula was clearly meant to apply to Prudhoe Bay production, since the ELP formula became effective for Prudhoe Bay as soon as the legislature approved the ELP in 1977. The economic limit factor is now working exactly as the legislature intended, providing sufficient returns on industry investment to allow continued capital investment in new projects in all Alaska's oil fields. These new projects, in turn, provide solid private sector jobs for thousands of Alaskan workers, and in the long term, return more tax revenue to the state. There are many marginal economic projects planned in both the Prudhoe Bay and Kuparik River fields over the next 5 years. Associated with these projects, many jobs in Alaska are at stake if net severance taxes are increased. We estimate the number of man years of work for North Slope work alone for these projects as follows. Kuparik facility construction and installation, 3,000. Kuparik development drilling, 1,000. Prudhoe facility construction and installation, 9,000. And Prudhoe development drilling, 2,000. Associated with these 10 new projects, would be additional jobs in facility operations, drill site operations, and maintenance. The best way to maximize the economic well-being of Alaska residents in the long run is to provide incentives for private investment in new Alaskan business and new projects in current Alaskan business. This makes the whole economic pie larger and everyone benefits. Raising taxes to maintain state spending at current level merely redistributes the current level of resources, slicing a smaller economic pie in a different way. Worse, raising taxes sends exactly the wrong message to potential investors, in effect saying that your investment capital is not welcome here. The United States in the 1980s has reestablished itself as a role model for economic policy and sparked a worldwide tax revolution, but all seven of the major industrialized nations that participated in the recent economic summits reducing their marginal tax rates. As a result of lower tax rates, over the last 6 years, 19 million new jobs have been created in the U.S. economy, more than twice as many as in Japan, West Germany, France, Italy, Canada, and Great Britain combined. The experience of the overall U.S. economy holds a valuable lesson for Alaska. Lower marginal tax rates are extremely important in attracting new business investment, which creates new jobs and personal income. Lower marginal tax rates are important in maintaining the entrepreneurial spirit, which allows small business to thrive. The best way to provide for public education and other important services provided by state government is to encourage private investment in Alaska by not increasing the burden on potential investors. To solve the state's budget deficit problem for the long term, state government needs to tighten its belt just as the oil industry has. As oil prices declined starting in early 1986, petroleum companies and the support industry in Alaska made adjustments to remain economically viable in a period of declining revenues, reducing costs to levels sustainable in the new economic environment. In direct contrast, we observed the state government adding over 1,300 new positions from late 1987 to late 1988. And to make matters even worse, Governor Cooper's fiscal year 1990 budget proposes to add more than 400 additional positions on top of that. The governor's spokesman, Mr. Erickson, is fond of quoting from a recent study from the Institute for Social and Economic Research saving a 15% budget reduction across the board, which cost the lasting thousands of jobs. What he failed to tell you is that this ICER study looked at only one side of the equation, as they were directed to by the state administration. The other side of the equation is the $350 million needed to fund that portion of state spending, which does not fall down to us from heaven. That $350 million would have to be taken away from the private sector of the economy, for the cost would be the loss of a greater number of Alaskan jobs than the reductions in jobs from cutting current state spending.
Thank you, sir. So, Dotna, we do know that you're there, and Mayor Williams, you're up next. I understand that Mr. William Curtis in Soldotna is going to be sending us written testimony rather than testifying this afternoon, and Mr. Curtis, if you're still there in the room, we do appreciate that. I might tell everybody that the senators who started with me are all three still here. We have Senator Fisher, Senator Adams, and Senator Kelly, along with myself. And in the audience, we have some representatives of the administration, both the Department of Revenue and the Governor's Office, and I know that we have people from the Governor's Office also in Fairbanks listening in, so you have a good audience. Mr. Williams.
Chairman, this is the moderator in Soldotna. Mayor Williams had to leave to meet Representative Swackhammer. He hopes to be back to testify later, if that's all right.
Okay, that's fine. Would you just let us know when he comes back? And we'll go to Anchorage to another one of those who we hope aren't nonprofits these days, Mr. Jim Taylor from Neighbors Alaska Drilling.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Jim Taylor. I am president of Neighbors Alaska Drilling, Inc. I appreciate being granted this opportunity to present my views on this subject. Obviously, Neighbors is vitally interested in the outcome of the health question. Our survival as a company depends on our customers continuing to employ drilling rigs. In addition to our obvious desire to prosper as a company, however, I feel we are also a good corporate citizen. I would like to take a few moments to set out the effect of one drilling rig operating as on the Anchorage for Alaska community.
We're probably out hunting.
Although drilling contracts are not identical, the following numbers are very difficult. On a typical operating rig, we will employ 58 people. These people will be paid directly in wages and benefits $3,400,000 per year. We will spend approximately a further $2 million on supplies and services. We require a very large variety of goods and services to support our rigs. Neighbors does business with over 150 suppliers in Alaska. Contrary to some popular opinion, this money is truly spent in Alaska, and we employ Alaskans. Of the 58 people on the rig I researched for this presentation, 56 live in Alaska. The two who do not moved out of the state long after we hired them. Neighbors simply does not hire people from outside the state. Neighbors employees, with the company matching the employees' contributions, were able to contribute over $51,000 to the recent United Way campaign in Anchorage, an average of over $230 per employee. We think all this points out to the healthy drilling industry is a good thing for the state of Alaska. The numbers quoted above are for our share drilling costs only. If our rigs are running, a great many other companies and people prosper. I will not attempt to quote numbers for other suppliers and services required to drill a well, but I do know it is very significant. We are probably not more than 30 or 40% of the total cost of drilling a well. I'm not qualified to debate the hundreds of millions of dollars at stake here. I do know, however, that above all else, our industry requires a sense of stability. No one can make the huge capital investments required in the oil industry in an environment where the rules may be changed any time. In closing, I urge the legislature to leave ELF alone. Tighten your belts like every private employer and their employees in the state have already done. But do not kill the goose that lays not only the golden eggs, but virtually the only eggs. Once again, thank you for this opportunity to share my views.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Next in Anchorage, we have Val Molyneux from VECO.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Val Molyneux, an employee of VECO, Inc. The company formed and incorporated in the state of Alaska in 1969.
with the owner and all his executives, with homes and families, residents in the state of Alaska. Pico has worked on projects in Yakutat, Seward, Homer, Kenai, Whittier, Anchorage, Valdez, Dutch Harbor, Nome, and others, and on and off slope of Alaska. We've worked offshore in the Cook Inlet, Gulf of Alaska, the Pacific Ocean, the Bering Sea, and the Beaufort Sea. We built the first drilling rigs in Alaska, the first production modules in Alaska, and the first coal handling facility in Seward for the export of Alaska coal to Korea. We have employed thousands of Alaskans from all over Alaska. Senate Bill 97, an act relating to the oil and gas private production tax, specifically out the economic limit factor. The oil industry pays its fair share of taxes and looks for continued stability in the tax structure to maintain prudent investment. Should the oil formula be modified, we would see a reduction in further developments in the present oil fields in the Arctic, which would result in lots of jobs in the private sector. State of Alaska needs to be reducing the cost of the operating budget and not increasing the revenues for budget increases. I therefore do not support Senate Bill 97. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much. According to my records, I have two more people in Anchorage representing special interest groups, and then we'll be going to individual testimony. Next is Mr. Rich Carson from the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. I need the Anchorage individual list.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Rich Carson. I'm a certified public accountant in the state of Alaska, serve as managing partner of Coopers & Lybrand's Alaskan operations.
I can hear them in the background.
Okay. While I'm currently the president of Common Sense for Alaska, I'm also a member of the board of directors of the Anchorage Chamber, and I serve as the Chamber's legislative committee chairman. It's in the latter context that I present my testimony on Senate Bill 97, the bill that would, if passed, provide the economic limit factor help. There's been considerable discussion in press coverage and advertising concerning the proposed revision on health. Frankly, I'm confused. Quite certain now that we've gotten the priorities and objectives all mixed up. What are the objectives of 97? Are they revenue generation, economic development, or the establishment of a fair and stable tax policy in the state of Alaska? After reviewing 97, I've concluded it certainly will raise taxes and increase revenue to fund current state spending. It may create minimal economic impact. I don't use the word development. It will not lead us to, nor demonstrate to others, to our potential investors in Alaska, that we have a stable or fair state tax policy. In fact, quite the contrary. Individual investment decisions are made based on expected economic benefits. This would certainly be the case at Pluto or any other place in Alaska. Investments have undoubtedly been made at Pluto and elsewhere over the past 10 years, assuming else in effect. This is quite similar to many real estate investments made during the 70s and early 80s. Most of these investments were made on the assumption that existing federal tax benefits would be available to the investor. As all real estate investors know, the Tax Reform Act of 86 changed that quite dramatically, in fact, making many of those real estate investments, frankly, economic disasters. The result? Well, ask any real estate investor to perhaps check your own investment portfolio. The same result can occur in the Alaskan Petroleum Industry with the passage of Senate Bill 97. Let's all get the priorities straight. We all know what they are, but some find it difficult to act on them. We must get state spending down to sustainable levels and not seek tax increases to solve revenue shortfalls. We must develop and maintain a stable and fair system of taxation in the state. We must initiate real economic development incentives to attract new and expanded business activity in the private sector. It is clear that some political prerequisites will be needed to act effectively on these priorities. Let's face it, these unusual conditions today as we're forced to face them. The Anchorage Chamber of Commerce supports adjusting the level of state spending and the development of economic opposes and has opposed any increase in taxation, according to the Chamber opposed the Senate.
This is Marjo Riley. We have 18 in the Kiski.
How many in Anchorage?
Thank you, Mr. Carson. Now Gordon Stevens from Fleur Daniel and Gary Light in Anchorage. We're going to use you as our bridge from special interest groups over to individuals. So please be ready. Mr. Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Do you want anything?
My name is Gordon Stevens. I'm the manager of project operations of Fluor Daniel, Alaska, the largest engineering company in the state. I will testify in opposition to any changes in health. The company I represent provides engineering and construction services throughout Alaska. Indeed, during the economic downturn, three national engineering construction companies closed their Alaskan offices and numerous small Alaskan firms failed. I'm happy to say that times have started to improve and we have been able to hire a number of employees from seven local companies that were forced to close. As crude oil prices improve, oil companies are again able to utilize engineering and construction firms, and our staff size has grown accordingly. 1 month ago, a milestone was reached in our industry. For the first time, an oil production module was shipped to the North Slope that was designed and built by Alaskans in Alaska. A number of companies, including our competitors and all of our 13 subcontractors, worked hard to demonstrate the viability of this technology to the owner, BP Exploration Alaska. For the community, this one mini module provided roughly 80 jobs. Better news is that truckable mini modules could be a year-round in-state industry producing a dozen modules a year for the next 5 to 10 years. But a word of caution, additional taxation could easily remove the narrow margin of return on this investment, making truckable mini module industry unprofitable in Alaska. On behalf of the over 160 employees of Fluor Daniel Alaska, and the many more families and subcontractors who depend on us, I most strongly urge that there be a stable tax climate, that is, no change in health, and that the state operating budget be cut. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. That concludes our special interest group testimony, with the exception of Mayor Williams, who we hope will return to us in Soldotna. I very much appreciate everyone who has testified, keeping your testimony to less than 5 minutes. We really appreciate it. We have over 50 people that we know of to testify throughout the state, and that's without knowing how many people we have in Anchorage. So we have a lot of people ahead of us to listen to. We want to hear you. If you could please try to keep your testimony to 2 minutes, we'd very much appreciate it. And I'd appreciate, again, the help of the LIO folks in letting people know as they're coming up on 2 minutes. And we're going to start with Gary Light from Anchorage, who is one of the people with the Taku Campbell Community Council. And Gary, we made available to everyone on the committee your letter and the attachments yesterday, and we all have them here. So would you please go ahead?
Thank you, Senator Pierce. My name is Gary Light. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before this committee. Part of your challenge is to determine what the facts are versus the fiction. I'll try to establish a point of reference with only facts. First is the fact that I do oppose Senate Bill 97, and for that matter, House Bill 118, not just because of the detrimental effect on the development of marginal projects within the state and the nation's two largest oil fields, nor just because of the state's already more than fair share of the value of oil produced of excess of 30%, but especially because of the negative impact on all businesses currently in Alaska and those considering business operations within the state of changing tax rules, especially of even the consideration of changing tax rules retroactively. This is definitely not good business practice. There's been considerable discussion on the impact of ELF on the development of marginal fields. The industry says it will promote development, and the administration says that. The industry says it will hurt more than help. The question I have is, do you think the oil and gas industry would oppose something beneficial to development? Of course not. The issue is not marginal field development per se, but rather money on both sides of the issue. The fact is that the industry and the private sector can spend money more efficiently and effectively than the public sector can, and without taking those dollars from the private sector, more jobs would be created, the economy would be more stimulated, more dollars will flow into the permanent fund, more dividends will flow out to all Alaskans. The governor talks about fairness of tax rates, as if more taxes are needed to be fair. I think former Governor Hammond defined fairness pretty well when he suggested it would be fair for the state to take 30%. Since Governor Hammond stated this objective in 81, and the service taxes were raised 15%, the highest in the nation, and the help was deferred at Prudhoe Bay until 1987, The state has averaged more than a 30% take, and the Department of Revenue's projections of future take under the current ELF range from 57% to 103%. That's about 103%. The state would take more than industry. In fact, the state would take while industry took the demoir. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Light. I've just been...
What was that last word?
I don't know. Yes.
That mean nothing?
Senator Kelly, Gary, we couldn't hear your last sentence. Would you just repeat it, please?
Thank you, Senator Pierce. The last statement was that the Department of Revenue's projections of future take in the current bill range from 57% to 103% for the state of Alaska. That's 103% under the current bill, which means that the state takes while the industry loses. Thank you.
Thank you. In Fairbanks, Mr. Kaufman with Irish Trucking. We missed because we didn't know that you were with Irish Trucking, so we'll take you next, and Senator Kelly is smiling.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Madam Moderator, members of the House Resource Committee. My name is J.D. Kaufman from Irish Trucking with Fairbanks. I'd like to encourage you to vote against the passage of House Bill 118 for the following reasons. Number one, integrity. It sends a signal for the investors that consistency is not the hallmark of changes of rules in the middle of the game is okay. We have asked them to give our solemn word and we agreed to the conditions of the elk. We did not ask any exceptions at the time of our government to decrease in all prices or inflation. Turn away state government. The attempt to modify our word at this time would show a shameful lack of integrity in the single world of business in agreement with the leftist party work the paper it is written. Number two, opportunity. The oil industry has planned their budget according to the projected income. That budget includes exploration and production activities which are extremely important to the economic well-being of transportation. And if you cut back, the oil industry projected income will produce a direct impact in the income of transportation. It is only a common sense that all industry will bring any opportunity for Alaska. If we do not support them in their industry, we Alaskans will be losers. Working together is better than not working at all. Number three, responsibility. We need to see responsible government. Let us set aside this patty search for more money. Several incidents in a record of every saying and every more inefficient state government. Let us take the responsibility of signing our bill to debt and learning to live within the means of our state level as we have learned to live within our means at home. Let us follow the example of all companies themselves, spending full authority to the income. They already have shown us that their income declines, so that they're spending. Tighten up management and make more cost conscious. After 5 years of economic hard times, let us then encourage big oil to go back to work instead of discouraging them by filing all more taxes. Let Alaska be known as a state with integrity, opportunity, and responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Now we'll take Tom Bryce in Fairbanks, and then we'll go out to Kotzebue for Mayor Willie Goodwin.
Madam Chair, honorable member, thank you for the opportunity to express my concern on the elk. I appreciate the fact that you're hearing testimony on Senator Adams' legislation, and I would like to express my support for SB 97. I believe that Alaska has been used as a store of natural resources long enough. Alaska has a right to a fair share of its oil and revenues that may be produced from it. This right was substantially reduced when the state's royalties were set at 1 out of 8 barrels for 12%. Other oil-producing states receive right around 25%. Another point, I think that Alaska has been duped on that aspect. Not only that, oil companies are allowed to write off losses on worldwide ventures against Alaskan profits when they're figuring their income tax. Now, it seems to me that they have been paying a lot of money to make sure that their severance tax break isn't adjusted to allow a more equitable system based on field capacity as opposed to well activity, that is. The oil companies are taking the people of Alaska on their royalties, which are basically set in contracts, so I don't believe that can be changed. By the current accounting system that determines the income tax, which can be changed and not to be, why should they also keep taking the people of Alaska with an economic limiting factor that is ludicrous and shameful? I'd love to hear you, Senator, say Darko, Miko, and BP, hey, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. But one of the strong reasons that I'm here today is that I'm a student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. My concern is that the pending $7 to $15 million budget cut that is waiting in the wings for that institution. Senator Adams, I'd like to know what your thoughts are about the possibility of losing the extended sites at Casa View and Nome. Maybe somebody might ask Senator Binkley about closing down the facility in Bethel. This is because the oil companies must continue to take the state for a ride. What about the future of Alaska? Are we going to protect our future with a post-secondary educational system that will have the ability to generate the state leaders of tomorrow? Or are we going to keep going, or are we going to keep giving the out-of-state oil companies the power to run our state? Also, Senator Kelly, I'm one of the people that has donated both time and money to get the other side of the Elk story told. In conclusion, I'd like to thank Senator Adams for his comments Thursday about the past and the genetics of the current elk. And also, I'd like to commend the representative from the district in Fairbanks that encompasses the university on his statement, it's our oatmeal, not the headmaster's. And also, thanks to the rest of the community for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bryce. Out to Kotzebue, to the mayor.
Thank you, Senator. Members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak on the issue. The city of Kotzebue passed resolution 893 in January supporting adjustment of the economic limit factor. Also, the North and Northwest Mayor's Conference in February 9 passed resolution 892 supporting legislation to adjust the health. I might add that the organization is open to mayors north of the Yukon, and also I'd like to add that this organization in advance has asked ARCO for a donation, but having got one red suit. Also, in Vice President of the Alaska Conference of Mayors, but Mayor Williamson Kina will be speaking on our behalf, which I'd like to add that we support the adjustment. We at the local level, we don't see the day-to-day flow of money for the state, but reading a newspaper and seeing JY News how much profits the oil industry makes from our resources feel that we should be realizing the benefits. John Kennedy and Winston Churchill had their day with their situations. I believe that this day and age and the future belongs to us, especially when we talk about the resources that belong to all Alaskans. I believe that before the legislature considers any taxes that affect the pockets of the residents of Alaska, it should consider the oil industry and forget for this one time where your campaign money comes from. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to go to Whittier, where I understand we have some people online. Could I have the first person in Whittier, please? And be sure to give us your name at the beginning of your testimony, because we don't have it here. And please try to keep your testimony under 2 minutes. By the way, we now know that we've got nearly 30 people waiting in Anchorage, added to the between 40 and 50 we have elsewhere.
Good afternoon, Senator. This is Mayor George Chibok in Whittier, and I'm going to speak for the majority of our city council. We feel, without a doubt, that we should support Senate Bill 97 as well as House Bill 118. I'm a member of the Get Real Task Force, which was formed by the Conference of Mayors in Fairbanks in November. We made some statements to the legislature regarding our feelings on how to raise revenue, and we also asked that an audit be done to cover the spending of the government. So far, all those things have not become effective. There are some major concerns among the Conference of Mayors and all, especially the local governments, that we need to do both, cut spending and generate more revenue. So I would like to go on record as strongly supporting Senate Bill 97 and House Bill 118. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Georgia. I like that name, the Get Real Task Force. Let's go to Nikiski, and we don't have your names either, so please, let's have testimony from Nikiski.
Nikitsky, and Terry Kearns will be our first speaker. Madam Chairman, my name is Terry Kearns. I represent myself. We have already heard a lot of the things that, a lot of the data that everyone has given, such as the seventh task in Alaska, 50% is the highest in the nation on the oil companies. In trying to inform myself, I did go ahead and make a call to one of our major oil companies. It asked what the tax rate was. I was informed by this company that it is two times the average rate, higher than the average rate imposed on them by any other state. State spending, as we have already heard, is 4.5 times per capita. And that is higher than the national average. We have over 1,300 new state employees that have been hired since Governor Cooper took up his administration. All that I can say, Madam Chairman, is that I find it ludicrous that we as a state would go ahead, rather than looking at cutting our spending, rather than looking at trying to balance our own budget, we're going to go ahead and try to impose more taxes on the only industry that is supporting the state of Alaska. Federal government kind of trusted the same thing to a number of us, and I'm sure that many of you out there that made the mistake in investing in multifamily dwellings over the last several years got hit very hard when all of a sudden our federal government decided to change its mind as to what our taxes were going to be. When they decided that the most that we were able to rely on our small fourplex that we have was $20,000 lost per year, it threw us and many, many other people into such economic problems doing that that many people have had to turn back their fourplexes and their investments. I think that if the state of Alaska was so ludicrous as to go ahead and impose the same type of thing onto our oil industry by imposing and changing their minds and making a new tax go ahead and be imposed upon them, it's going to definitely change the way that we decide to invest the money in Alaska. I feel that what we absolutely have to do before we do anything, I mean, I don't even care if you vote on ELF this time. By all means, let's get busy with some less than 50 days in which to go ahead and get our budget set. Quit playing around with all of these things and get down to cutting the budget. Let's quit our spending. Let's quit having the most highly priced run government that we've got in the nation. If you've got to spend money, why don't you spend it in training and send somebody down to one of the other states to go ahead and learn how to spend our money? Let's figure out how the other states are doing it, and let's cut ours.
Thank you, ma'am. We're going to go to Valdez next, and then I'll be going to Soldotna, and the first person I have in Soldotna is Jack Chosvig. So if you'd be ready, sir, we'll go to Valdez now.
Valdez just
has
one observer.
Oh, I'm sorry. We thought it was a participant. Thank you. Well, then let's go to Soldotna to Jack Chosvig, and I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name.
No, you pronounced it right. I was speaking for myself as an owner of a small service company, business here in Kenai, that I cannot see how, by implementing Senate Bill 97, that this is going to help the state of Alaska as a short-term remedy. I also believe that also in the books, the bill to raise a dollar a barrel of oil for the Cook Inlet oil will do very little to help any of us here in this. And I'd just like to voice my opposition to Senate Bill 97.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Let's go ahead and go to Gary Buchanan in Soldotna, and then I'll go to Fairbanks for the first person there. Thank you.
Gary
Buchanan.
My name is Gary Buchanan. I'm going to say I oppose any taxes that they ought to stay there. I just like to stay kept there, but thank you.
Thank you, sir. To Fairbanks, to John Hayes.
Thank you, Senator. state of Alaska. We all realize that this is Alaska's non-renewable resource, and in fairness, we should share this wealth. Obviously, the original intent of the current health legislation hasn't occurred at Prudhoe. I feel that the oil companies will continue to develop. Do we really think for a moment that if taxed fairly, they will stop investing in the state? History of the state shows us that as long as there have been profitable ways to develop and exploit our resources, they will continue to be developed. Senate Bill 97 doesn't make developing unprofitable. It more equitably shares the resource between the big oil companies and the people of the state. I urge you all to support Senator Adams' legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes. We're going to go to Anchorage, and I'm going to take three people there. First, Mr. Kent English, then Mr. Ross Thompson, and then Paul Laird. So if we could have you, Mr. English, first.
It is a pleasure, Senator and members of the committee. I am Kirk English, but don't worry about that. It's just another four-letter word. We, the people of Alaska, elect our legislators to manage the matters of state government in our collective name, in a prudent, honorable, and trustworthy fashion, but in our collective name. It has been held in good faith by all parties to the ELF agreement that this agreement was made in the good name of all Alaska as an incentive for the oil industry to invest the necessary capital in Alaskan oil recovery to ensure the health of Alaskan revenues for the longest possible future. An agreement was made, and the oil industry has kept faith for their side of the bargain. I personally, as an Alaskan, want the state of Alaska's side of the bargain kept too. Any guidance used to alter, change, or in effect steal by legislation the investment capital of the oil industry in our state violates the honor and trust of all Alaskans. And that labels each of us as dishonorable and untrustworthy. I don't want to be a party to such a mega box bungle game, nor do I want represented by those of the oak that do. I'm for my elected representatives to keep our good name, to live with those agreements we have made, to show the world we are good faith people worthy of the trust necessary to attract risk capital investment as required in such large quantities to develop our state's resources. Yes, it is the world, not just the oil industry, that is viewing us. It is the hard rock mining and coal investors. It is the big processing industry, the Olympic Committee, timber shipping, tourism, high-tech traders, and telecommunications people as well. Who will invest in such arenas as proponents of volatile business ethics? Ask people of Oregon in the days of Tom McCall when they put up the road signs at their borders, telling the tourists that Oregon was a nice place to visit, but please don't stay. Ask our good neighbors from British Columbia in the 1970s when it was dreamed that the state should own it all. Ask the poor people of Central and South America with their machine gun governments. Who invests long-term capital in such fickle winds? Those people can sure tell you who won't. The oil industry producers are reported to have made a 29% plus return on investment last year in Alaska. It was accomplished through increased efficiencies and rising world market prices, not through confiscation of the fruits harvested as a result of other good faith investments. Let us maintain our honor. Leave ELF alone. Clean up our state spending efficiencies and build strong investment relationships to ensure a long and rewarding future for all Alaskans here now and those to come behind us, and we hope they will. And thanks.
Thank you, Mr. English. Russ Thompson in Anchorage.
Hi, I'm Ross Thompson. I'd like to thank Senator Pierce for the opportunity to speak before the committee. I won't go into a lot of details, but I would like to state that I'm against any changes to the ELF. I was quite surprised at the previous testimony given by Bob Gardner, where he stated that there has not been any legislation introduced to cut state spending. I challenge our representatives down there to introduce legislation to cut spending. Thank you.
I introduced a resolution asking the governor to do an immediate hiring freeze. We'll see how far we get with that one. Mr. Laird, you're next, and then I'm going to go to Fairbanks and take, who's next? We had John Hayes, so next up there is Lyon Westcott, if you'd get ready, sir.
Chairwoman Pierce and committee members, my name is Paul Laird, and I'm a six-year resident of Eagle River. I'm here today to warn informed body that opposes changing the elk, and not because I have any revelations on the issue that haven't been pummeled to death already. Despite all the complexities and all the debate, it really boils down to whether you want to prolong the lapse of economic slavery and state spending, or to continue to provide a mechanism for developing a strong private sector. Like the majority of Alaskans, I favor the latter. The governor's latest line of elk rhetoric willfully misrepresents the oil industry's production profits and investments in Alaska. His recent 30-minute elk program on TV was reminiscent of a commercial for a miracle cure for baldness, with the same degree of credibility. Alaska's economy has lost plenty of hair since oil prices collapsed in 1986. The governor's miracle salve of increasing oil taxes won't make it grow back, and it won't disguise our overdependence on state spending. It isn't an issue of the state getting its fair share of oil revenue. The state has collected nearly $30 billion in taxes and royalties from North Slope production. Or, in terms of the governor would understand, that's $70 million a day, or $5,000 a net. It isn't an issue of promoting development in small marginal fields. There's not a single field that will be developed because the elk has changed. Despite the misrepresentations to the contrary, the administration knows that not even Millie Point was paying production taxes under the current elk prior to its shutdown. Zero. So why is the administration trying to mislead us? The reason is obvious. It's because the real issue is whether to extract more money from the private sector to cover the governor's bloated $2.3 billion budget, so we can add 1,300 more people to the state payroll like he did in 1988. Please vote against Senate Bill 97 and leave the office it is. Instead of increasing taxes, let the oil industry continue to lead the way in building a strong private sector in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Now up to Fairbanks for Lyon Westcott, then we'll take Dick Ferris in Fairbanks, and then we'll go down to the Kenai Peninsula, probably to, well, not probably, we'll go to Nikiski first. Mr. Westcott.
Madam Chairman and the Senators gathered, thank you for allowing me to testify on Senate Bill 97 concerning the modification of the elk. I think the bottom line of this whole issue is that is our oil, and therefore the money that comes from our oil is our money, and we deserve to get our fair share. As an alumni of the university here, I'm quite concerned that they're giving just a tax break alone equivalent to the university's statewide budget every year. Now, another point that the oil companies like to bring up is that they seem to think that Prudhoe and Kuparuk are a marginal field. Now, it doesn't take a geologist such as myself to figure out that Prudhoe and Kuparuk are not marginal fields, and they are probably the most profitable oil fields in North America. If you really honestly truly believe that they are marginal fields deserving a tax break, then this is bridge in Brooklyn, New York that you might be interested in buying. Another point to bring up here is that in 1977, when the ELF was originally proposed, technology did not exist then that would allow the oil companies to prolong the useful life of the field. And I thought it was really interesting that the representative was testifying about
the
governor's access to the press.
She'll buy it. You can include tenure, getting rid of teachers if there's no money. You know,
really tired of seeing a bunch
that's
of
a big switch for her.
Sitting around a fake kitchen table in probably a studio in Seattle somewhere, talking about a stable tax policy when our tax policy has only changed once in the past 11 years.
When it comes down, what we ought to do is look at it.
Myself,
I don't know if
you
can bring it. You're
going
to hope you don't bring it down.
And you're going to be here in 20 years, or the representatives of the oil lobby who are probably not going to be here in 20 years. Thank you for hearing my testimony, Chairman, Senators.
Thank you, Mr. Westcott. Now Dick Ferris in Fairbanks, and then we're going to be going to Rick Bearfield in Nikiski.
Dick Ferris has agreed to relinquish his spot to Fairbanks North Star for Melania Holmes. She was scheduled as a special interest group.
Okay, Mary Helms, go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity.
First, I'd like to establish my role in my testimony. First, I'm not an enemy of the oil companies. I see them as taking a stand that they're hired to take by the people that hired them. And I likewise am taking the stand that the people that hired me have hired me to take. And that is in favor of the modification of the ELF. The oil companies many times have said that they don't consider ELF as being a tax break. So my question is, how can it be a tax increase if it was never a break to begin with?
No,
one person previously testified that one of the differences between Alaska and the other oil states is that we own the oil. That makes a little bit of difference as far as the income that Alaska should generate from the oil. The state of Alaska government has been fully supported by oil companies, as you've noticed in the ads that they have been putting out. But you've got to remember that the support that comes from the oil companies in the form of taxes has not come out of the goodness of their heart. They're purchasing a product from us, and that is the money that we're receiving from them. So please remember that your role also is to represent the people that hired you to do your job. Thank you.
Thank you, Juanita. We appreciate that. Now we're going to go to Nikiski and take Rick Bearfield. Then we'll take what maybe is Roger Curtis, and after Nikiski, we'll go to Soldotna and take Judy Buchanan. So if you all would be ready, I'd appreciate it. Rick Bearfield.
Hello, Madam Chairman. My name is Rick Bearfield, and I oppose the modification or the abolishment of ELF. It seems to me that ELF has become a hot issue only when the state wants to expand its size and institute more programs. The state government's answer to want spending sprees is to increase taxes on industry instead of doing the responsible thing by cutting government spending across the board. Anytime the private sector makes cuts in its business to adjust to the economic climate of the time, then the government should be making the same kind of cuts also. By modifying or repealing ELF, the state government is effectively biting one of the hands that feeds it. As a private citizen, it seems clear to me that we should be encouraging new exploration and production of our natural resources by keeping ELF in its present form and by putting a tight leash on government spending. The real issue at hand here is not ELF, but gross government spending. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Curtis.
That's Roger Turns, and I want to say that I'd like to see the ELF stay as it is, and I'm against further government spending. In fact, I want to keep it brief.
Sir, would you please repeat your name to me? I think I have it wrong.
T-U-R-N-E-S.
T-U-R-N-E-S. Thank you very much, sir. Now we'll go to Soldotna, to Judy Buchanan, and then we'll take Paul Weller in Soldotna.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for that speech today. It's great. I believe that you have gotten any tax support.
Thank you, ma'am. Paul Weller in Soldotna, and after Paul, we'll be going back to Anchorage. So if Anchorage would be ready, please.
Yes, your bill. There's smart people.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Paul Weller. I'm a retiree from the oil industry here, and I just want to go on record as living in the oil community that I was definitely opposed to any changes in the oil. And I can't take credit for it, but I heard a gentleman the other day say that if the state of Florida had a big freeze and lost the majority of their orange crop, that would drastically affect the income and the state spending from taxes that they would have. So the next year, the legislature would go in and then increase the tax on the citrus growers, and that makes about the same sense to me as what we're trying to do with the ELF. And I just want to make this statement.
Thank you very much. I'm going to go to Anchorage for three people. That would be Gordon Stevens, Bill Stites, Stephen Loves is the way we have it here, and then I'm going to go to Whittier, so if Whittier would be ready. Mr. Stevens.
And for that reason, and also because many of my objections to
I'm employed by Alaska Pacific Transport here in Anchorage. Our business has just recently begun showing signs of picking up. It would be criminal to do anything at this time to in any way hinder the slight improvement being shown in the oil-related economy. I am against fooling around with the economic limit factor in any way, shape, or form. The state does not have a revenue problem. The state has a spending problem. I thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Now, I had Gordon Stevens down as wanting to testify. Is he not in Anchorage?
Yes, Chairman.